This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
The detentions that followed these arrests resulted in cases of torture and ill-treatment.
That's Françoise Hampson, member of a UN Commission of Inquiry, speaking through an interpreter on the arrests of opponents to Burundi's recent constitutional referendum. Details coming up. Also, Zimbabwe's president is blaming a group loyal to former First Lady Grace Mugabe for a deadly explosion at one of his campaign rallies. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar signed a framework agreement in the Sudanese capital Khartoum today, announcing a permanent ceasefire throughout South Sudan to take effect in 72 hours. The agreement also provides for security arrangements that include protection of oil fields in South Sudan and developing the country's infrastructure. Nabil Biagio reports from Juba.
Today's framework agreement declaring a permanent ceasefire in South Sudan is based on the cessation of hostilities agreement the parties signed in December 2017. President Kiir, Machar, representatives of the former detainees and political parties in South Sudan all signed the document. Following today's signing ceremony, Machar said the agreement will put an end to the war in South Sudan.
This agreement has a lot of meanings. First, the war should come to an end by this declaration of ceasefire. I believe our people in South Sudan would be the most happiest that ceasefire is today declared and would take effect in the next 3 days.
Machar says the framework deal will help facilitate more agreements on the contentious issues that remain unresolved between the two parties.
To me, it's a start of a new phase in the lives of our people. I believe this agreement will make us work very quickly so that we can end the agree on the outstanding issues in the bridging proposal.
At the same ceremony, President Kiir praised Sudan President Omar al-Bashir for facilitating the face-to-face talks that led to the signing of the framework agreement.
I'm coming here to express my gratitude to His Excellency President Omar al-Bashir for helping us to reach this day where we have signed this agreement.
President Kiir says he is committed to the ceasefire declared today and looks forward to signing more agreements with Machar.
It is the day that our people of South Sudan have been expecting, and I'm happy that it has finally been achieved. I'm committed to respect the whole document that I have signed and will abide by all the agreements that will follow.
Government and opposition delegations are expected to remain in Khartoum and engage in consultations over the next 2 weeks. President Bashir says he's happy to help facilitate the return of peace to South Sudan.
I am very optimistic that as we present this agreement as a gift to the people of South Sudan who are living in their country or as refugees outside the country, and all South Sudanese living in different parts of the world, we tell them that this agreement is the beginning of restoration of peace and stability in South Sudan.
Today's agreement provides that the parties must reach a compromise on the gaps between the government and opposition proposals before the Kiir Machar talks move to Kenya. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
A United Nations probe into the human rights situation in Burundi finds government opponents are subject to mass violations, including summary executions, disappearances, arbitrary arrests, and torture. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva, where the Commission of Inquiry on Burundi has submitted its latest report to the UN Human Rights Council.
Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza's recent declaration that he will support the future president of the republic when his mandate ends in 2020 has been welcomed by several countries. But the UN Commission of Inquiry cast doubt on its credibility, noting it lacks a clear and firm commitment by the sitting leader not to run for president in the upcoming elections. Commission member Françoise Hampson says the situation in Burundi remains very disturbing. Since the beginning of the year, she says the Commission has documented human rights violations targeting those opposed to the proposed amendment of the Constitution. She speaks through an interpreter.
In particular, the Commission has received reports of numerous arrests of people who called for a no vote in the referendum, who sought to meet to discuss the draft amendment of the Constitution, or who refused to join the CNDD-FDD. The detentions that followed these arrests resulted in cases of torture and ill-treatment.
The CNDD-FDD, short for the National Council of the Defense of Democracy Forces for the Defense of Democracy, is Burundi's ruling party. Despite widespread opposition, Burundi last month voted for a constitutional change potentially allowing the president to remain in power until 2034. The commission says it has received information on people who were executed or abducted because they were members of opposition parties or refused to join the ruling party. The investigators blame the Imbonerakure, the youth wing of the ruling party, for being behind most human rights violations during the referendum campaign and of harassing, controlling, and intimidating the population, forcing many to flee the country. Burundi Ambassador Renova Tabu accuses the Commission of lacking objectivity. He says its report is politically biased and is based on a campaign of disinformation. He says his country reserves the right to bring to justice those who defame the government. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Zimbabwe's president is blaming a group loyal to former First Lady Grace Mugabe for a deadly explosion at one of his campaign rallies. Sebastian Mumfu reports from Harare.
In a BBC interview Wednesday, President Emmerson Mnangagwa alleged that a group that sought to replace his predecessor Robert Mugabe with Grace Mugabe was behind the July 23 blast. Mnangagwa had just finished addressing the crowd in Bulawayo when the incident occurred.
My hunch, without evidence, is that the people who are grieved by the new dispensation are the G40. That is a logical and reasonable conclusion one may make.
The G40 is an informal faction of ZANU-PF politicians, including Grace Mugabe, who wanted to replace the party's older officials before she was fired from the ruling party last year. Mnangagwa came to power last November after Robert Mugabe gave in to military pressure and resigned.
I think this is a political action by some aggrieved persons by the current democratic dispensation in the country. This is a criminal activity. It doesn't give any dent to the stability of the country. But of course, we must make sure the population is protected by make sure we hunt down these criminals. And only when we have got them are we going to be able to assess the extent to which the network.
Police say the explosion killed two people and wounded 47 others. Mnangagwa also ruled out postponing the presidential and parliamentary elections set for July 30th. After the interview was broadcast, some Zimbabweans criticized Mnangagwa on social media. They included Mdudusi Matutu, a former editor of a government-controlled daily, and Mnangagwa critic, who spoke to VOA.
It's quite an extraordinary intervention by the president to be making statements as he has made, right in the middle of a police investigation. A lot of Zimbabweans are still waiting for the police to release their findings. And I think a lot of them are waking up with a bit of a surprise that the president will make the statements that he has made, effectively preempting the police investigation or redirect the focus of the police investigation towards his enemies. And it's quite interesting that basically says he thinks that the former first lady, or at least the former first lady's associates, are the ones who are trying to kill him. And he's offering no evidence whatsoever for reaching such conclusions.
University of Zimbabwe political science professor Eldred Masunungure says he does not believe opposition parties were involved in the blast.
I would rather think that it is an intra-regime affair, a continuation of the struggles within ZANU-PF. It's a continuation of the factionalism that bedeviled the party in the past 3-4 years.
This week, police spokeswoman Charity Charamba said no arrest had been made, and she said the police were offering a reward to anyone with credible information regarding the blast. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Churches in Zimbabwe today commemorate the United Nations Convention Against Torture, and they recall what's known as the Dark Season. In 2008, from April to June, the country was swept with political violence after an election stalemate between the leader of the opposition, Morgan Tsvangirai, and the leader of the ruling party, Robert Mugabe. A decade later, Tsvangirai has died and Mugabe is out of office, but the legacy of that election remains. Reporter Kudza Izanwashi has details.
Rugare Kozanai is with the Zimbabwe Council of Churches.
People are gathered here today to commemorate the International Day on Torture, as well as to celebrate the survivors of the 2008 political violence. People have been intimidated, people have been displaced as a result of political violence. We've got victims, people who suffered, some even died because of political violence. That is what happened in 2008.
Bishop Anzalimo Magaya is the president of a Christian advocacy organization called Zimbabwe Divine Destiny.
Everybody remembers that this time around 10 years ago, there was mayhem in this country when we had the harmonized elections in 2008 on the 29th of March. The former president, Robert Mugabe, was defeated by the late Morgan Tsvangirai, and ZANU-PF, in a brutal show of force, did unleash violence in ways that we had never witnessed.
Most of the victims supported Tsvangirai, and he refused to take part in an election rerun while people were losing their lives. Mugabe ran uncontested. Magaya says violence of that magnitude was last witnessed in the early 1980s during the Gukurahundi massacres, where thousands in Matabeleland lost their lives in a military campaign.
And I remember in 2008, when I was in my office, suddenly saw hundreds of people homeless, maimed, coming to find shelter in our church. And I remember this particular day interviewing over 50 victims of political violence from Mashonaland East, West and Central. I could not hold my tears because it was a very touching moment.
Last year, the military forced Robert Mugabe out of office after he had led Zimbabwe for 37 years. His former vice president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, was put in office and is running as the ZANU-PF presidential candidate in the July 30th election. Thus far, the campaign has been relatively calm, although two people died in a bomb blast at a Mnangagwa campaign event on Saturday. Mnangagwa himself has called for a peaceful campaign. Magaya, who has been arrested several times for political activity, says ZANU-PF has not really changed since 2008. Father Sylvester Muchineripi is with the United Citizens Alliance and agrees with Bishop Magaya.
Unfortunately, those people who were perpetrating violence 10 years ago are now in power. If Emmerson Mnangagwa is really, really serious about a free and fair election. He must start by making sure that those things that are supposed to be implemented, they are implemented.
Magaya says Zimbabweans should vote for leaders who are not tainted with violence and who have their best interest at heart. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
You were listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Twenty past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. A United Nations probe into human rights situation in Burundi finds government opponents are subject to mass violations, including summary executions, disappearances, arbitrary arrests, and torture. And Zimbabwe's president is blaming a group loyal to former First Lady Grace Mugabe for a deadly explosion at one of his campaign rallies. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Cameroon's government says the number of soldiers and police killed while fighting armed English-speaking separatists who want to split from the county's French-speaking regions has increased from 80 to more than 100 in the last 2 weeks. And kidnapping and members of the security forces also continue to rise. With civilians and separatists complaining of widespread human rights abuses by the military and police, calls are growing for genuine dialogue to end the war. Reporting from Yaoundé for VOA, Moki Edwin Kinzeka says members of civil society are pressing Cameroonian President Paul Biya to free arrested leaders of armed groups, for peace to return and the carnage to stop.
Nous avons perdu le gendarme Djamea Jean Bosco, tué à Oué dans la Mentou. L'adjudant-chef Nganyou Robert, tué dans le village de Melo.
Speaking before an unusually quiet parliament, Cameroon Defense Minister Joseph Betty Asomo read the names of soldiers and policemen who have died in the war against armed separatists fighting for the independence of an English-speaking state in Cameroon.
L'adjudant Delster Kene, soldat de deuxième classe Futsu Taka Armel Shirisa, les élèves gendarmes Batula et Kemfa.
As Betty Asomo read through the list, VOA counted more than 120 names of slain servicemen. The defense minister was invited by the lawmakers to give a balance sheet of a war that Cameroon President Paul Biya declared 7 months ago against people he said were terrorists wanting to divide his country. Robert Bapu-Lipot, a UPC opposition political party lawmaker, says it was the most touching plenary session of parliament he has ever witnessed in Cameroon.
This is the worst thing which can happen to a soldier. A soldier knows that he can die when he's defending the integrity of his nation against another army, but never against his own citizens. That's why we think that those who took guns against our nation, they must now abandon this option and know that we are belonging to the same country.
The figures given by Betty Asomo indicate that about 40 more soldiers had lost their lives in less than a week since Cameroon's Prime Minister, Philemon Yang, announced that the country had lost about 84 military and policemen and launched a $23 million emergency humanitarian assistance plan for hundreds of thousands of citizens who, he said, live in precarious and life-threatening conditions in Cameroon and in neighboring Nigeria due to war. He said hundreds had been killed and 74,000 internally displaced persons were facing famine, along with disastrous health consequences. He said 21,000 others had fled to Nigeria. United Nations estimates are even higher. The World Body says more than 100,000 people, a majority of them school-aged children, have fled the violence in the English-speaking regions for safer locations. 40,000 have crossed over to Nigeria and many are missing. Emmanuel Tata is a civil society activist and leader of a group known as Unite Cameroon, says the conflict continues to claim lives because many people do not trust the military and the leadership.
We should be guided by truth. There's a lack of confidence between the people and the government and institutions.
There have been calls for President Biya to be open to dialogue and to release Ayuk Tabe, the man who proclaimed himself as president of what he called the English-speaking Republic of Ambazonia. Tabe was arrested in Nigeria with 47 of his collaborators and extradited to Cameroon. Violence broke out in the English-speaking northwest and southwest regions of Cameroon in November 2016 when a strike by English-speaking lawyers and teachers against what they described as a marginalization by the French-speaking majority in the bilingual country degenerated into calls for secession. In November 2017, President Paul Biya declared war on the separatists, labeling them terrorists. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
It's a day at the World Cup where almost anything seems possible, with only one of the 8 teams in action already eliminated. Even with 2 losses, South Korea could still make the knockout round, and Mexico hasn't clinched a spot from Group F despite 2 wins. South Korea plays Germany while Mexico is facing Sweden. In Group E, a single point separates first through third places. Already eliminated, Costa Rica plays Switzerland while Brazil plays Serbia. The remaining African teams have the day off. For more details on World Cup action, stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports next. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Suleiman Terawali, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, decentralized systems of governments in Africa. In Uganda, it's called decentralization. In Kenya, devolution. In Nigeria and Ethiopia, it's called federalism. The transfer of authority from central to local government on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Bungani in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board. This is Upfront on the Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront Wednesdays at 17:30 UTC
right here on VOA Africa.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.
Sporty greetings to all our VOA listeners. This is Sonny Young, host of the Sunny Side of Sports. Please join me at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC, Monday through Friday, for special World Cup updates during the month-long football festival in Russia. Right here on The Voice of America.